Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down.
Well, there's a song that speaks for itself and our subject tonight. Before you tie that knot, should you sit down with a lawyer about a prenuptial agreement? Should you protect your hard-earned assets from the one you love? Well, sounds like a strange question because marriage is forever until it isn't. Well, tonight we'll share information with you about prenups so you can decide if they are for you. My guests tonight are Tara Jackson. She is a personal finance expert and author of Four Financial Languages, and divorce attorney Michelle Thomas. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Certainly you can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. This is a Friday fire conversation. It's already, as I said on my social media page, it's already hot as catfish grease outside. So it's going to be really hot in here tonight. Thank you both for coming in. Michelle, good to see you.
You as well, Harold.
Tara, what's happening?
What's going on?
Well, I'm glad to see that both of you are in place. I want to start with Michelle. What is a prenuptial agreement?
A prenup is a contract between two parties who are about to get married, and the contract governs largely what happens financially between the parties, what money's going to be remain his or hers. Are they going to joint accounts, or are you leaving the marriage with what you came in with? So if you don't have a prenuptial agreement or a contract that you've entered into prior to the marriage, the court's going to decide if and when the marriage fails, and that is something that you don't want.
Mm-hmm. Are they only for failing marriages, and are they only for or failed marriages, and are they only about property and money?
So you can include a lot of things in a prenuptial agreement. It's not limited to money. The only thing you really cannot include are issues related to children, such as child support and child custody. That is not going to be enforceable if that's included in a prenuptial agreement. But short of that, people can include things such as adultery clauses, which means if you cheat on me, if that's the reason why our marriage is failing, you don't get a dime of the money. You can include things related to who's going to do chores, what kinds of, how you're going to balance or divide different types of household responsibilities. But that being said, the primary reason most people enter into prenups is because of the money.
Wow. Chores?
Right.
Wow.
You can get that detail. But let me just say, if you feel like you have to get that detail with your partner, you might want to think again.
You might
is this your
married.
Person?
Yeah, yeah. Right? Maybe you think about your dating
is
practice.
Is this your person?
You didn't do the dishes, so
correct.
You get nothing.
Yeah, you nothing at all. Tara, is this a good financial practice?
It depends. Like she said, if you feel the need to go that deep into it, where you feel like it's not going to last, you know, I wouldn't go into it. But if you have a significant amount of assets, the both of you, that may be a good financial thing to protect your assets before getting into it. But there's a lot of people that had nothing, then all of a sudden made it big. One of them made it big, and the other one gets half. So I'm single. I don't necessarily want to get married with the guise of it might not work and get a prenup.
So here's the problem with that, is that I really say a prenup is much like insurance. Right. You don't buy a house. You don't buy a car without insurance.
Okay.
And when you buy the insurance for your vehicle, it's with the hope that you never have to use it, that you never get into a car accident.
Okay.
But at the point that you need it, you'll be so glad you have it.
She's good.
Yeah. Love is wonderful.
She just sold me on that, because I know I'm going to be really famous. And whatever guy I meet, I'm probably going to make more money. You know what? you're going to be my attorney.
Listen. Mm-hmm. But it's so true. And you can't look at where you are today. You have to look at the future and all the various, you know, possibilities as to what could occur. So there's businesses. I mean, imagine spending the next 10 years building your brand, building your, you know, your presence. And then somebody comes along and says, you know what? Half of that's mine. They didn't help you write a book. They didn't help you, okay, with one client or attract one.
And we have several examples of that right now. We have Mary J. Blige, unfortunately.
Correct.
We have
She had a prenup.
She had a prenup? Thank God.
But he challenged it. So hopefully we can get into that too.
I was going to say, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. Goodness gracious. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about prenuptial agreements. Are they right for you? Before you say I do, should you write down all of the reasons that you won't?
How about that?
How about that?
Yeah, somebody would say that's a preach. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lynn calling from Northeast. Thanks for calling, Lynn. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just wanted to say that people shouldn't fear getting a prenup because every state already decides what happens to your assets when you get a divorce. So it's basically just a way to decide that if you don't like the state's options, you can choose for yourself.
That doesn't make sense. Every state decides for you, but if you don't like their options, you can choose for yourself. So that those are contradictory. Either the state decides or you can choose for yourself. You can't do both.
So what Lynn is saying is that if you sign a prenup before you get married, then what you and your spouse decide is going to happen with your assets or whatever you acquire, that's how it's going to be distributed at the end of the day. If you don't have a prenuptial agreement, then the court is going to either look at various factors, what we call equitable distribution factors, to decide how should money be divided equitably between the parties. What that means is you could have built a business over 10, 15, 20 years and have your spouse walk away with about half of the value if you don't have a prenup previously.
So or you could decide between the two of you.
In a prenup, yes.
Well, no, I'm talking about in a divorce proceeding instead of she's such an optimist.
Right. I'm like looking at you like, yeah, that's going to happen a lot. But that's almost like a will.
Love.
Because if you don't have a will and you're intestate, that the state will determine how your assets are going to be divvied. If you have a will, you determine what that
Correct.
Is. So the prenup is like the will for your marriage.
Well, what a prenup is, it's protecting your future. It's being proactive about your future. And so it just gives you that assurance to know that no one's going to take away your hard-earned, you know, assets. And even things like as basic as retirement accounts. You know, people may think that, well, I'm the one that got up and went to work every day. I'm the one that earned the money. Not realizing that their spouse can walk away with half of that.
She's
if
right.
You don't have a prenuptial agreement.
That happened to my girlfriend. She got half of her ex-husband's 401k.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Lynn, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about prenuptial agreements. Are they good for you? So in your experience, Michelle, who asks for them more, men or women?
Whoever has the money is the person who asks for them, or whoever has real estate assets, whoever's expecting an inheritance. A lot of people ask for prenups because they've received some piece of property, not realizing that an inheritance is generally going to be that person's separate property anyway, whether you have a prenup or not. But it's really whoever feels like they have something to lose going into the marriage is the one that initiates it. Now, if your prospective spouse has a problem with that, then again, you need to rethink, is this your person? Mm-hmm. Because if the finances are lopsided, where one person has greater wealth than the other, there's a great disparity there. Your significant other should want you to feel comfortable and should want you to feel protected. If they push back on that, well, now we got another issue.
And this Tara, is not so much about... this is not about, well, if I die, you get nothing. Mm. This is about if you do something that I don't like, or we have some kind of conflict, whether it is, adultery or domestic violence or or the fact that, you know, you leave the toilet seat up
or whatever. Or we mutually agree that this is not working and we need to cut it loose.
Yeah, yeah. So how should you, from your perspective, enter into this conversation? Is this a conversation that you need to have after you've dated a person a long time, or should it happen after you've gotten engaged? What do you think?
I think this conversation or any conversation about money should happen way before you get engaged, because you don't want to get engaged, find out that they're really bad with money, and then, you know, the embarrassment of breaking off the engagement. I think you should talk about money before you have sex. I just think that should happen, or soon after, if you think there's going to be a long
term. Okay, wait a minute. Hold up. That sounds like money before you have sex.
Well, I'm just saying, if this is a long term.
How much is this going to cost
you,
baby? Right.
Leave it on the table. Okay. Okay, so let me clarify. If you believe that this relationship, because I know there's a lot of people that do this one night stands I talk about in financial fornication. Mm. Yeah. So if we think that we're going to be in a long term relationship, we think this is going somewhere, we need to have the conversation. I need to know what your financial language is. I need to know if you're a spender. I need to know if I'm a saver, because if we don't have these conversations now, we're going to fight about it afterwards, and it could be the reason for the demise of the relationship.
Yeah.
Which I don't think money should ever be the reason. Money is just a tool. It should never be the reason why a marriage is destroyed.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let me talk to a man. Walter, calling from Northeast. Thanks for calling, Walter. What's
good
on your mind?
Everybody. If I won the Powerball for $410 million, and all of a sudden I have women in D.C. want to check me out, should I get a prenup before I meet them or before I get married?
So you're saying you want to have a prenup template?
Yes.
Even before you meet Ms. Wright?
Yes.
You want to fill in the blanks.
You should probably have an application with that as well. What do you think, Michelle? Is that an idea for him to already have a template?
So listen, if you receive or you win the lottery before you get married, in many jurisdictions, at least here, that's going to be considered your separate property or your separate money. So unless you commingle it with your spouse or future spouse, that's money that you would keep even in the event of a divorce. Now, some people just want a prenup just for that extra, you know, confidence and that extra assurance that the other spouse can't get anything. And that's fine, you know, if you want to do it that way. But generally speaking, prenups govern what would occur with marital property, which is something that you would receive after your date of marriage.
Hmm. Walter, thank you so much. Okay, explain something, because you said if he won the lottery before he got married, if he doesn't, that's his money unless he co-mingles it. Isn't that the same as if he got a good job before he got married? The proceeds from that job would be co-mingled with that marital relationship.
So the money that he received from that job that he had in the bank on the day that he got married, that would be considered a separate property. But assuming this person continues to get up and go to work every day and continues to earn money during the marriage, then that's where you get into issues where that's considered marital property. And if that marital property is mixed with premarital property, then you're going to look at a commingling situation.
Then what about the interest that he earns from that $400 million that he earns after he gets married? Is that... That's a proceed that happens afterwards, right?
So that's an excellent point and question. So if the appreciation that occurs on an asset that you had before the marriage is still going to be that separate property. If it arises from separate property, then it's going to remain separate, even if the appreciation accrues during the course of the marriage. But this is why people need to contact a lawyer, because it can get complicated and it's hard to digest and understand on your own. So that's why I say.
Or just not get married.
Hey.
Who said that? Let me go to 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about prenuptial agreements. If you have a comment, if you have a question, I promise that I will be taking your phone calls even after 7:30. 30. We have some great experts here. We have divorce attorney Michelle Thomas and personal finance expert Tara Jackson. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will continue on Sirius XM channel 141 in just a few seconds. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about prenuptial agreements. Is it right for you and your future spouse? My guests are Tara Jackson, personal finance expert and author of Four Financial Languages, and divorce attorney Michelle Thomas. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, calling from Gaithersburg. Hey, Lisa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Lisa, I apologize. You are breaking up. I'm going to hang up. Give me a call back. When you call back, I promise I will take your call, but I think we've got a bad connection there. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tara, I spoke about this earlier. You said that these conversations need to happen early. My question is, how do you begin that conversation from a woman's perspective? What kind of language should you use? How should you broach the subject?
Well, in my book, Four Financial Languages, I talk about how to communicate with different people. So just like the love languages, we all have a different love language. We all speak a different language in love that we need to feel love. And my argument is the same with money, right? There are four dominant financial languages: saving, spending, investing, and giving. And normally we speak in those dominant language. We can be fiscally bilingual and speak in different ones. But you need to know if your partner is a saver, spender, investor, or giver, because that will determine how you're going to communicate with them. You also need to know what your financial language is as well, because you need to know how you need to be communicated with. For example, my dominant language is spending, right? I love to spend money. It's orgasmic. It's organic. It's everything, right? The transaction is just everything to me, right?
There's that.
And if I am getting involved with a saver, we are speaking two different languages. He likes the word budget, right? And as a spender, when I hear budget, I hear diet, die, deprivation. I can't, you know, and I'm going to rebel against that. That's going to tell me not to spend so much money, and why don't you save? And the one thing you don't do is tell a spender not to spend money, because they're going to spend your money, their money, and everybody else's money. So there's certain words that trigger certain emotions, whether they're positive or negative. And you need to know that when you're communicating with your partner, your mate, your spouse, or whatever. So if you are a saver, it would behoove you to learn spending if your spouse is a spender. And the same thing, if I'm a spender and my husband is a saver, I need to communicate to him in saving, because if I keep talking spending, 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 he's going to retreat, and then he'll probably hide the money because he thinks I'm going to spend all his money.
Mm. And then that creates a much more difficult dynamic.
Money misunderstandings, yeah. Dollar dialects, all of those. And so to avoid that, if we just take the time to learn, it's just this example. You live in America, you get sick of Trump, and you want to leave and move to Spain. Mm-hmm. It's not going to serve you to only speak English in Spain, right? It would serve you to learn how to speak Spanish. And so it's the same thing. If you're in a relationship with someone that speaks saving, it would behoove you to learn the language of saving.
Do you recommend separate accounts for couples that speak those different languages? Or how do you recommend couples get over those hurdles?
I recommend they have that conversation early on. The only thing with savers will automatically want separate accounts because they're afraid spenders or investors are going to spend and invest or give their money away. I have couples that combine all of their money together. One's a saver, one's an investor. I have one couple, they separate everything. It really depends on you and how comfortable you are. And it's a matter of trust. With savers, it's all a matter of trust. Once you lose their trust, they don't want to commingle all of their money. They're going to hide some of their money, or they're going to become what's called a wealth warden, where they ration out the money. So they control all the money in the household, but then they're going to ration out the money, almost like an allowance.
I have some thoughts about that, too, but let me go to the phone lines first. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Barbara calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Barbara. What's on your mind?
Hi. Actually, this is a very good conversation. I'm married at the present time. But I was married about 15 years ago, and I insisted on a prenup, so we actually did a prenup, but now we're in the process of getting a divorce. So the prenup is actually very critical to the divorce proceedings. So I just wanted to let everyone know that prenups do work, so people should be very savvy when it comes to their real estate, their real property, as well as their personal property. Because at the end of the day, when you go before a judge, all of that stuff will be already determined prior to the marriage.
I see. Okay, Barbara, thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alan calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling, Alan. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me? I'm in my car.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Hi, good evening. I'm the father of one, a daughter, 28. Who is in grad school right now, a PhD program, but she just recently got engaged, and I've established two brokerage accounts with three Vanguard mutual funds and five stocks in those three brokerage accounts. She does not fully understand the language of finance. I've tried to gradually introduce her to let her know the difference between stocks, bonds.
Well, Alan, let me stop you. What's your question?
But the question is, with this impending engagement, should that be part of the prenup? Or when she comes into the marriage with these accounts, those are considered hers regardless? That's the question. Are they separate?
What's she studying? You said, that's what I would.
And I want to know what is her financial language? Is she a spender or is she a saver? Do you know?
No. She's pretty much.
She doesn't know.
Yeah, a spender.
She's a spender. She's illiterate.
She's a spender. I can tell. And you're an investor. You speak investing. And the issue with savers and investors, y'all are a little bit more judgmental and you speak jargon that most other people don't understand, right? So when you're communicating to her, she's probably looking at you with a glazed-eyed look because she just doesn't really understand. It doesn't relate to her. When you talk to her in a matter of if you don't do this prenup and he takes your money, that takes your spending power away. If you take a spender's spending power away, they get very, very scared.
But to answer his question about whether those accounts will remain hers, the issue is that if she decides to contribute to those brokerage accounts after she gets married, then there could be an issue with her soon to be spouse taking a share of that if it doesn't work out. And so for that reason, certainly she should consider a prenup. Quite frankly, I think almost everybody should consider a prenup because you need to put all your cards on the table. Couples, I've handled and worked on prenuptial agreements where couples have actually broken up over it because they had not fully disclosed their finances. They were not comfortable having those conversations. And when they finally did, it was just they realized that they were not compatible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Now, good luck, Alan, with your daughter. I salute you for trying to take care of your daughter because I have one too, so I do understand. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tony calling from Columbia. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
If a couple is married and they have one child each from a previous relationship, and they made a will before they got married, how would that affect the husband and wife if they haven't made a will together?
Well, the will can. I mean, to the extent that the will is disposing of that person's separate assets, it sounds like these are this is a sort of the second time around for them. Then the will would control. If the parties decide to enter into a prenuptial agreement, then they would just want to make sure that all of their estate planning documents, wills, and anything else are in alignment and are consistent.
Mm-hmm. Because a prenup is when you separate and you're alive. And you can utilize the assets. The will is if one passes away, and where do those assets go? So, although they could be related, they're two separate events that occur, right?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, but the prenup also identifies what is his, what's hers, what's marital. So you need to know what it is that you have the legal right to leave behind mm-hmm. to your, you know, children and the like. So you really want to consider doing both. I mean, you want to have a prenuptial agreement. You want to have some estate planning documents, a will, and you just want to make sure that all of those various documents are consistent and in alignment.
Right, because if one passes away, the will supersedes the prenuptial agreement, or the prenup doesn't even matter at this point because one's passed away, right?
Well, it depends on what the prenup says and what assets belong to which party. So if a prenup says that this is, no matter what, a party or earns during the marriage remains their separate property, then the will would certainly be able to dispose of all of the assets in that person's name.
Mm. Okay, Tony, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michelle, I want to talk a little bit more about what happens when these things fall apart. While they're sitting in your office, I think you kind of listed, you know, a couple of things, but I just found that all really fascinating. So when do you begin? What kind of issues, more specifically? I mean, what are some of the danger signs that there's going to be a problem when they're sitting in your office and they're talking and they want a prenuptial agreement? I mean, why? I guess my question is, if two people are in love and they expect to stay in love and all of that stuff, why would either one of them say no?
Oh, Harold, for so many reasons. I mean, people get married, sometimes I say for all the wrong reasons, but one, you don't know what the motive is of the person that you're marrying. I mean, remember today, people are marrying later, they're marrying due to age or due to societal, you know, pressures to marry. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people get married. And so, you know, you have to make sure that you're dealing with someone that with whom you can really be transparent with, where there's no financial deceit going on. But there's a host of reasons why people may be resistant to a prenuptial agreement. What I can tell you, though, is that if you are the one with the, and listeners hear me, if you are the one with the money and your spouse or prospective spouse is challenging and pushing back on the concept of a prenup or wants to make material changes or add loopholes, just take a step back and reevaluate the situation, because the person who does genuinely love you and is marrying you just for you because mm-hmm. they're so madly in love,
I'm an incurable romantic.
Yeah, if you're just
me.
Right, yes, Harold, that's what you do. But you know, you need to be careful about that. I mean, I've seen too many times where people get a chance to walk away with, you know, almost everything that the other person has spent. Also, we haven't touched on the issue of alimony. Alimony can be included in a prenuptial agreement. Now, imagine having a spouse or significant other who's a stay-at-home, whether it's the woman supporting the husband or vice versa, and then the marriage doesn't work out. And without a prenuptial agreement, you end up paying that person for the rest of their life. Why is that fair? Hmm. You know, maybe it's fair in certain situations, but trust me that if you're the person paying, you're going to wish you
Harold's
had a prenuptial agreement.
No, that's not fair.
You don't see any circumstance where that could be. I mean, there's some.
I agree. I was just, like I said, I'm an incurable romantic, but I do believe, yeah, that in the particular example that you just used, no, you're not going to, you know, pay them for, you know, necessarily the rest of their life. I think that,
But a court can order you to do that.
Yeah, I know
if,
that.
If you don't have a prenuptial agreement.
A court can order you to pay someone for the rest of their lives even if they
permanent
get married?
Alimony.
Permanent alimony even if they get married again?
So in some jurisdictions, there's what we call an automatic termination. So, for example, in Maryland, alimony would terminate upon remarriage. So that does not necessarily, that's not necessarily the case if you get remarried. But if you don't get remarried, then, you know, there's risk exposure. So some of the things I look for in terms of assessing or analyzing a prenuptial agreement is what is the risk exposure that this person is going to end up having to pay their spouse for long periods of time? And if there's a risk there, meaning one person's a very high earner or a celebrity or whatever, or the other person's a stay-at-home parent or spouse, then we need to look at how do we structure this? Do we say that you're not eligible for alimony unless you've been married 5 years or 10 years? Do we cap the amount that you're entitled to? You really want to think about that and ultimately take your future back into your own hands.
Mm-hmm. Let me take this show back into my own hands. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Delancia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was calling because I wanted to know a little bit more about postnuptial agreements. I know we're talking about prenuptial, but what about postnuptial?
Yeah, postnuptials work the same way.
What is a postnuptial?
Sure. So a postnuptial agreement is a contract. It's a legally binding contract that two married people enter into after they've already been married, but they decide, you know what, we're not looking to get divorced right now. But we do want to decide what's going to happen to our assets, real estate, the marital home, or anything along those lines. So you can sign an agreement, a contract, that says that in the event of some divorce down the road, this is what would happen. Now, if you, I do postnups as well. At the point that you're contemplating a postnup, we got a problem.
Right.
So
that's a hot mess right there.
In most situations, when I've done a postnup, just fast forward a year or two and I'm doing their divorce. That's a precursor.
I mean,
hopeless romantic here.
Forgive me again. I'm sorry. Clutch the pearls. But I'm just kind of like, I mean, it's kind of like...
How do you even, bring that up to your spouse? Like,
I don't
even... It's a tough...
I love you, baby, but, you know, we need to think about this post-nup. You know what I'm saying? I'm not feeling the way you're spending money, so we might need to talk,
spending
right?
Money, I think the spending money probably is the least of the concerns. Right. I'm going to imagine that there is something else afoot or some other body part, if I may ask. But Delancia, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I think, you know, from and I asked this before, what kind of conversations were, and this is the dating piece, this is the engagement conversation, and you did provide a little more difficult clarification, if that makes any sense, where you got all of these languages and different ways to talk to people. Why can't you, would you just say, here's my stuff? Once you decide that you're in love, that you want to marry this person, do you just say, here it is?
I think at some point when you all are, you know, when we're ready to, like, say we're going to do this, we do need to have that crucial conversation, right? Mm-hmm. We probably need to start having some money dates. I talk about money dates in the book. We might need to start having some money dates on a regular basis where we talk about our goals and aspirations, but also how are we going to financially reach those? If we want to travel the world or whatever, you know, do you have a savings account? Do you have an IRA? We need to know what each other's financial position is, because I don't want to get in a marriage because I love you and then be financially destroyed right after the marriage. And then,
which does happen.
Which does happen, especially when you owe a couple baby mamas down the road, and then they sue and then can get my assets. No. So we do need to have that clarity, that transparency. And if your spouse or your future spouse or your person you're dating with is very hesitant to be transparent with their financial situation. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It could be bad because you can help someone through. I've helped an ex get to an 800 credit score and he had a 400 credit score. We didn't get married, but that's another story. That's another show. So
I was going to say,
it wasn't because of his financial situation.
But he wasn't an ex when you were helping him.
No, he wasn't. Oh, okay. He wasn't an ex, you know, and it was, we didn't break up because of money. You know what I'm saying? Because we understood what we wanted together. And because I had the knowledge and I had this, I was willing to help him through that. Mm-hmm. And so if you're transparent with someone and they're transparent with you, you want to help each other get to the point where you both feel comfortable in that relationship and getting married.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, because Michelle said something just kind of offhanded earlier in the conversation where she said, yeah, you're starting to have this discussion, and then all of a sudden assets are revealed that never – and what? Yeah.
But here's the problem. So from my experience, what I've seen is that particularly when it's the woman who is the greater breadwinner or who has more of the assets – is coming to the table and disclosing, engaging in full financial disclosure in order to finalize this prenuptial agreement, a lot of times what we're dealing with is the ego in response, because I've seen the husbands or, you know, soon-to-be husbands sort of puff up and then, you know, it cause tension and then arguments because they have a difficult time digesting the fact that, wow, this is what my, you know, soon-to-be wife is worth, or this is what she actually earns.
But are you suggesting that he didn't know before this conversation?
That's what I'm suggesting. Because money is a... But Harold, money is a really difficult conversation to have. People ask me, how do I even present this? How do I broach this topic with my partner? Because money, it's a touchy thing. And then when you throw egos into it, I mean, how do you...
And the most fragilest thing in the world is a male's ego. Mm-hmm.
That's what you say.
do you disagree?
Do you disagree?
This man, I disagree. But, you know, I do. Because I just think, you know, having been through the process before, you know, my thing is, as I said, the example that... My thing is here. Mm-hmm. This is what I...
And you're open.
That's as open. Yeah, my middle initial is T, but the next, you know, I don't, you know, but open is my middle. I just don't care because for me personal, this is just me. You know, if I've already decided that that I want you, then I'm going to take, you know, the good and the bad.
But when you're with your previous relationships, were you this open learn this through?
But what if there's a gross disparity? You're talking, you know, millions to, you know, seven figures to six figures. I mean, what?
Yeah, I don't.
It doesn't matter.
I don't care. Because
so a lot of people don't take that.
Yeah,
that
I know.
Position.
You're different. Because there's a lot of people.
But we don't need to be all personal,
But I think that there is an education piece in this, you know, for men that if you go in and you suspect that she makes more money than you, may have more assets than you do, then you need to prepare yourself for just how much. And if you can't address that, then you need to find somebody else.
Well, it's,
you know,
also,
I'm sorry for being,
it's also back to what
evolved.
You said about the intent too. You know what I'm saying? He may know she has more assets, but is he willing to do a prenup? Because his intent is to get with someone that has more assets.
Yeah, but okay. And so.
And vice versa.
So, but the problem with your approach is that if you're not having, of just moving on and finding somebody else, if you're not having this financial discussion until you're already engaged, I mean, that's late in the game.
Right.
And so I think to your point, you encourage couples to have that conversation as early as possible in the process.
If you're going through marriage counseling, you know, like I recommend that you go through marriage counseling before you probably think about getting engaged. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because by the time you're engaged, you're already investing a lot of money into getting the wedding done and all of this stuff. So before you start spending money on a wedding or an engagement party or whatever, we need to know some things. Are we compatible? So I always recommend couples therapy or some type of marriage therapy, but also couples financial therapy. And I've helped some couples through that.
But this is the point that I was making was that before you get engaged, when you begin to get serious about it, and from a man's perspective, but I think the woman should, that's why I said, here's my stuff. Okay, that, and this is all of my stuff, my assets, my debts, all this, my credit score. This is it, because that's not just about a financial conversation,
right,
but that also shows that you're serious. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And then I think, but the problem comes when, as you said, and this is from the woman's perspective. Oh, all of a sudden, he's got a problem. Yeah, he's already shown her his stuff, but then we go to the prenuptial, and you've only seen half her stuff.
Exactly,
and mm-hmm. then and so now, what would I get upset with that? Absolutely, because I've shown you my 1 million, and you have 7 million, but you only told me you had 2 million. And so, yeah,
I forgot about my other 5 million.
I did. That's right. Because.
Oh, you meant all of it?
I thought you just meant all of this account.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you meant everything.
Well, how could you forget about. Well, my daddy gave it to me when I was doing my dissertation.
Right. I forgot all about it.
So, what you're talking about is deceit, and, you know,
yeah.
and which I think is an important point, because financial deceit breeds other kinds of deceit. I mean, if there's financial deceit going on in a relationship, I'm not looking too far before I see, you know, adultery, yeah. and I see cheating, and I see other kinds of deceit. So
it
really is about just being transparent and honest, and can you trust this person? It's just very hard to get there for a lot of couples.
Yeah, because one of the things you talk about in financial fornication,
mm-hmm.
you talk about, are there any financial condoms?
Right. Financial prophylactics. That's just a budget, you know. I always say credit is like sex. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And if you do, use protection.
Ah.
A budget, you know.
Yeah. And a prenup.
And protection. A prenup now. For real.
So, we've talked about some of the cons. What has happened, Michelle, when there have been great conversations about this? Have you experienced situations where a couple has come in for a prenup and it went smoothly? And if so, why do you believe that it did?
To the extent that this conversation goes smoothly, it's because you truly are with the person for the right reasons, not because of pressure, not because of your age or any other reason like that. I would say that more often than not, I do see the conversations becoming increasingly difficult and challenging a couple. I see them postponing weddings frequently as a result of this, because they're not able to come to a meeting of the minds about this issue. And it is important. People say that money is the number one of the driving mm-hmm. factors of divorce.
Yep.
And I don't know that it's money as much as it is the disparity and differences in how the couple approaches it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
the money. Because like you said, if you have an investor and you have a spender, unless you have agreed in advance to have separate accounts or have a budget, like you mm-hmm. say, you can spend anything you want up to a certain amount, you're going to have conflict and tension.
Mm-hmm.
One person's going to feel like they're being taken advantage of. The other person's not pulling their weight. So these conversations often lead to conflict more often than they do harmony. But it's necessary, because if you can get past it, then I think you're in for a much more beautiful
and
ride.
And that's like what you said, getting past it is learning how to communicate in each other's language, you
mm-hmm.
know, and there are certain things you don't say to an investor and certain things you should say to an investor, and the same thing. And one of the most couples that divorce are savers and investors. You would think savers and spenders divorce. Savers and investors divorce because they're two different languages. A saver needs safety and security. An investor likes risk. And a saver doesn't like risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the saver is going to hide money. They're going to put money away. And that's when the separate accounts come. And then they argue about money because the investor is like, we need to make more money. And we can't do that with just in a savings account.
So here's my thing. And I'm really running out of time. But I'm so glad you're here, because I need to ask this from, and this is a question from an incurable romantic again. and I'm serious this time. I have been eternally fascinated with couples, married couples, that are able to have one bank account. But how do you, if you have one bank account and one pot, how do you surprise her with a large gift if both of you see what's happening in the account? I'm serious.
I don't know that a lot of men use your debit card or credit card. I've seen where, you know, they have joint everything, but he's still able to surprise because, you know, you're taking cash out. Hey, babe, I'm taking out this money. I'm using this money or whatever. And it could be a part of the budget. And he could or she could.
No, I ain't talking about that budget. No, I'm talking about an anniversary gift. You want to buy her an $8,000 or $10,000 tennis bracelet. That's not in the budget. There is no way that you're going to make a $10,000, I'm just throwing out that kind of money, without her knowing it.
Well, if you have a $10,000, you're probably planning for that. You're probably a planner if you're a saver, and you can save that much money. You know what I'm saying? So you probably plan that out. I wouldn't say lie about that.
Yeah, because then that could go into then the prenup will come out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so, who's this $10,000 for?
Right, exactly.
I want a divorce.
Oh, surprise.
It's for you.
Yeah, but no, if you have $10,000 that you can just cash out and spend it on something, you're probably a saver. You probably do it on purpose, and you're probably a planner. And so you've planned that out. It's us that are spenders, and we want to spend $10,000. We just going to take the money and not tell you, and then all of a sudden there is going to be a fight.
Yeah, but if you take the money, you don't have to tell us because we'll still see what's happening in the bank account if there's a joint account. Mm-hmm. See,
but most couples aren't doing joint accounts these days.
Exactly.
I don't remember the last time that a couple has only had a joint. They have a joint account, then they have separate accounts.
Yeah,
right. From what I've seen. Now, my grandmama always told me that I needed to have my own account somewhere behind, you know, the one I forgot to tell you about.
Mm-hmm. Something definitely to think about. I'm getting out of here. I want to thank both of you, Tara Jackson and attorney Michelle Thomas, for spending some time with us. Hopefully somebody will get something out of this conversation. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, June 28th. For news director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Iron Waller, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night and have a wonderful weekend. Have you seen her? My psyche told me she have a ex Serena, Trina, Gina, for Lopez, four kids, and I got to take... That's some foolishness.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2,